Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 12 for September the 3rd, 2013. Please, if you get a chance, check out my website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You can comment on these shows. I'd like to have your comments in there so I will know how I'm actually doing, and hopefully it's hitting home for you there to help you move along with your server needs or your networking needs. Also, if you have any questions, please call my voicemail line at 724-701-0911 or drop me an email at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you there. Tonight we are chatting. If you want to get in the chat room, we are on the Justin TV chat room. And by all means, jump in there and you can ask questions or say what you want to say. And I'd like to hear from you in there. But keep it clean. This is a family channel and we want to make sure we keep that all cleaned up. If you're listening to this on a podcast on iTunes, I want to thank you for subscribing to the podcast and pulling it down. Or if you're watching it on YouTube, remember that this show is live on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on justin.tv/jackstechcorner. Okay, with all the preliminary stuff out of the way and getting all that out there to you, that was a lot. You know, it's a big breath just trying to send it out there to you and getting that across. In today's show, we're going to talk about the importance of building your back-end network to meet the ever-increasing front-end. And this happens, folks, over and over and over. It seems like we're on a very repetitive type schedule. Every single year we work, and most of you know that I work for a school. So schools are unique in a lot of ways because we have a lot of different devices that we deal with. Probably even more so than your business. Your business out there may or may not allow outside devices. Some do, some don't. But most of the time anymore, you're dealing with those as a systems admin. People are bringing in those iPhones, the Blackberries, the Android devices, the tablets, the iPads. They're bringing these into your network and they want to get on your wireless. So we have to discuss tonight a little bit about how we need to kind of draw out that plan. You know, even a football team needs to have a plan. They need to have all their plays laid out. Well, we're kind of like that football team because we want to lay our plays out. We want to have our playbook written to know when the CEO comes to us and says, look, we're going to release this and we're going to do this. We have to know as the technicians what's coming next and be ready, be more prepared to handle that whole thing. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit tonight about something that we started in our school. And this may or may not happen in your office or in your hospital. And it probably is, even if you're not aware of it. This is probably happening and it's getting to be more and more commonplace. Even in Starbucks, any of these places you go to where it says, hey, we have free wireless. Go ahead and bring your device in, you know, sit down, have a cup of coffee, get on our internet, you know, and you can sit here and do some work. You have to be prepared for that. You have to worry about what's on that back end to take care of that front end. And what we're talking about here in our school is we're doing a BYOD. Now, what BYOD is, it's called Bring Your Own Device. So the kids are able to, they have that ability to bring their own devices into the network. So we have, and the majority of them, believe it or not, is iPhones and iOS in total. So iPhones, we see a ton of iPod touches. And we see a lot of iPads and iPad minis, which is pretty cool. Seeing that our, you know, student body, we're more of a rural type area. So, but these folks are buying these things for these kids and they're bringing them into the network. But we also have a lot of the Android devices and we have a lot of the Amazon Kindles. So we're getting those on our network. So even if you're in a business world, or like I say, hospitals I know are big for this because hospitals have clientele coming in the waiting room, and you might want to open up a wireless access point for those folks. It will give them something to do if they can use their tablet and read or do something as they're sitting in your hospital waiting room. But I'm going to talk about another part of this in just a second, where I think it's a downside of the technology world, the technologist out there. Everybody's not like me. thank goodness, that's probably a positive thing. But I do things a lot of times that other people look at me and just cringe, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But even businesses are going to find their networks being overburdened. Like after a Christmas holiday, think about that. After Christmas, people are bringing in, we had a lot of people bring Kindles in. First time I ever seen a Kindle, I had a secretary bring one in and say, hey, Jack, I'd like to get this up on the wireless so I can buy some books. I don't know why you want to buy books in the middle of the day. I mean, you probably should have some books on your Kindle device. Or they might have a Kindle, the Kindle Color, you know, whatever they call that, the Kindle Touch or Fire, I guess, Kindle Fire, or the iPad. And they might be getting these things after Christmas, and they want to get these on your wireless. So as you're bringing these devices on, we have to always be thinking about that back end and make sure. And I have our administration at this point, after 10 years of being there, when I first got there, they would just do something. They'd say, call me up and say, Jack, we just purchased 600 laptops. And never even include me in that conversation. They would get grant money, and they'd buy 600 laptops. Today, they call me up and say, Jack, we're preparing, and we think we're going to buy 120 iPads. Is the system ready to withstand that pressure? And then it's my job to sit down, and I get my playbook out, and we start looking at that playbook, and we say, look, I think we can. I think we can make that happen, and we do. I mean, that's our job as technicians. Now, I'm going to step back a little bit from this because I want to talk to you a little bit about, we call these people, and you may be one, I hope not. If you're watching this show, I hope you're not one of these people. I hope you're more like me. But we call them the network Nazi. And why, and I'm not classifying anybody as anything, but let's say the network warden, maybe, to give it even a nicer, cleaner name. It's these guys that want to lock their network down so tight and not allow anything on because they don't understand firewalls. They don't understand the way to route traffic through VLANs, so they lock it down, right? So nobody can use it, so it's unusable. We're working right now with our children in our school, so we're working from grade 7 through grades 12. Now, that's a big span of students. We have, now in our school, we have about 600 kids in our high school, so it's not a large high school. If you're with a larger school district, or if you're with a larger, you may have a company bigger than, I'm sure Google probably has more people working for them than 700, but they have to do this also. They have to plan. They have to write that playbook. If you're one of those folks, you know what? You better probably get out of this business because you're not going to fit in. That's what's going to happen. The business is going to eat you alive because as people are getting more devices, as the internet, you know, when I first started selling internet service in our business years ago, people said that internet will never go anywhere. It's a fad. Now the internet is just as important as having a refrigerator in your house or a stove. It's critical to have that because people do things like, you know, they send emails out, but not, that's even kind of old. They do all their banking. My mom does her banking. She's 79 years old. If she doesn't have her internet access, she's going to be pretty ticked off. All right. So if you're in a business and you're going to open up, even for your workers bringing in that new iPad, they want it to work. Right? You can't lock your network down and not allow them on air. That's just bad policy. Right? That's just not going to work anymore. With that said, that's my little soapbox thing I wanted to tell you about there. So you need to loosen up a little bit. All right. So when we start looking at our network and we start getting ready for the overall upgrade that we need to do, because we knew we wanted to do this BYOD. We knew these kids were going to be bringing these devices in this school year. We had to make sure the wireless was ready for that pressure. So we started setting out, and we looked at a lot of different vendors. And the vendor that we chose, I'm going to tell you here, because I like to spread the word of companies that I use and enjoy. Even, I mean, they're not backing the show. There's no money being exchanged hands, that's for sure. But the company's name is Meraki, all right? And Meraki was purchased recently by Cisco, but Cisco's keeping their hands out of it. They're letting the Meraki team take care of this wireless. And folks, it's amazing wireless. It's the best I've ever used, and I'm sure there's other brands out there that will do equally well, but this one is really, really good. And we truly enjoy being able to watch everything, and I'm telling you about that in just a second. But with more devices coming on, we knew we had to have that back end ready, so we upgraded the wireless. And our wireless right now is taking loads of almost 800 clients. And those 800 clients we have spread over 14 access points. We watched a client in our cafeteria, one wireless access point, folks, one. In our cafeteria, we watched it one day, it went up to 181 clients in like one lunch period. That's pretty amazing for one. Imagine doing that with your home access point, your home router. Hook that much. And a lot of people in business want to bring these home routers in, these D-Links, Linksys, Cisco bought Linksys, those little Cisco routers. Buy yourself something that you can centrally control, that you have one SSID. But these access points and this control unit is really amazing because it allows us to drill down. We can see where the student actually has been accessing. We can see where they try to access because we still have web filters filtering their traffic. But we know from these access points that it will take the load and take that pressure of all those clients, and it distributes it out really, really well and pushes them out through the internet. So we know that's working really well. But there's one thing we missed, and this is one thing that I wanted to do the show about tonight. We're going to talk about this. Is we missed how many actual IP addresses we had on our DHCP server. Now, we had a total. When we hit the limit, you know usually when you hit that limit. We hit that limit of IP addresses. We had a total of 814 addresses available on our DHCP server. We were setting out to put a couple new wireless access points in. And when you go to plug these things in, we had our Cisco gear. When you plug your Cisco gear and there's a green light on it that flashes. And it was flashing away. And I said, well, maybe we have a bad access point. It's always possible. So we took that access point down. And what we did was, We got another access point, plugged it in. It was blinking. And my partner turned to me and he said, Jack, he says, it's like it's not getting an IP address. And it was like a light bulb went off. As soon as I heard that, I said, wait a minute. Huh, that's interesting. So I went to the DHCP server, and I'm going to show you how to do this tonight. And for the radio audience out there, the podcast listeners, keep listening in because I'll walk you through it and I'll give you each step of the way what we're doing. I went over and I looked at the statistics of that DHCP server. As soon as we opened it up, there was a big red exclamation mark on it. I was like, well, that clues you in. There's something wrong. And it said we were using 814 of the 814 addresses. So we were maxed out. We had no more to give out. So we started running into the issue of, like, if somebody would just turn a laptop on, it wouldn't log in because it couldn't get an IP address. Very, very critical. So now what we did was I went in right away and I started working. We have a Class A network that I have subnetted down to a Class C network. So Class A, as you know, is that's explosive. That's a ton. That's millions of addresses. But we like to subnet down to Class C so I know exactly, you know, what I'm working with. Those small banks of 253 addresses, 254, if you believe or not in broadcast address. I'm old school. I believe in it. So now I open up another 1,400 addresses, and that gives us the 2,300 something around there. I can't remember the exact number. But we also had to lower the lease time. I'll talk to you more about that in just a second here. But we had to make sure that our overall lease times was not holding those addresses open, and it was. And I'm going to show you that, and we'll talk about that as we set this DHCP server up. Tonight, I'm also going to tell you how to set your DHCP server up. And for those viewing this YouTube video, you're going to actually see it happening. And we are going to set that DHCP server up on a 2012 server, Windows Server 2012. And we'll talk about that and how we have to set that up. So the big thing here is make sure when you're doing this, don't just worry about, we worried about the physical hardware aspect of it. And we did. We missed it. We missed the DHCP thing, and that happens. Right now, something else that we're finding out is our web filter may not be powerful enough to handle all those concurrent connections hitting it to filter that traffic out, and it's locked up a couple times today. So that's something that you, I mean, our internet folks went down to its knees twice today. All right. We were working just as we normally was. We were stringing cable. We were doing some cabling for a teacher, putting some USB extension cables in for a smart board in the room and getting that working for the teacher. And all of a sudden we get a call. The internet stopped. I mean, like dead traffic on a highway stopped. Like if there's an accident, dead. So I picked up my phone right away and I called our ISP and I said, look, are we having any issues? And they weren't. I called another school who I know also goes through the same ISP and they were fine. They were still moving traffic. So it kind of clued us in that it was on our end. And what we do right away is we plugged into their switch to see if that traffic was moving. And it wasn't on their switch, which is odd because it should, because we're not going through our gear. Then we're just going through their gear. But I thought about that for a second. I said, wait a minute. And I switched off the web filter. And sure enough, all the traffic started flowing again. We had great internet service again once it was speedy and moving along. So that's something else too. When you open up your back end, remember your internet connection. If you have a DSL connection in your business, you probably don't want to do this. Right now in our business, we have a 100 megabyte connection down and about an 80 megabyte connection up. And we're running full tilt through microwave links. So our microwave links is supposed to be as good as fiber. The only time it degraded, we got a really hard storm. You know that really heavy, thick rain that comes down? And when that happened, we actually started to, we lost internet connectivity just for a short time when it was like at its heaviest. So that's interesting with the microwave stuff. And if I think about it, I'll try to get some pictures and I'll put them up on the website here, tipsfromtheserveroom.com. And you can see how that's set up and used. And we'll talk about that one night. And maybe I'll get some pictures of the radio too and show you the radio connections we have in our rack and how those work. All right, so seeing there's nobody talking here in the chat room this evening, we will move on here now, and I'm going to show you how to set up the DHCP server on a Windows 2012 server. So with that said, let me move around a couple windows. Get this out of the way here. I don't know why it does that. Anyway, we'll drop this down here and we'll bring up our Windows 2012 server. So right here you'll see where it says DHCP right here, and that's I installed. That's a new feature or a role, so I did install that DHCP server. Let's bring that up. Expand this, and then I'm going to make it so the excuse me, I will make it so we can see this a little better. There we go. And just bring this over here. There we go. Now we can see that better. All right. Pull my notes back up here so I can get a view of these notes. Okay, so the first thing you want to do when you go to your DHCP server is you have to know what your scope is going to be. Now, scope is the number of IP addresses we're going to have available on our network. Even if you're going to subnet this down like I do, I subnet it down across our firewall, and we'll talk about that another day, how the firewall is set up and how everything's actually put together there to allow it to route traffic. And we'll talk about routing traffic through the different IPs a little bit tonight, and we'll touch on that, but I want to tell you about that more later without actually showing you my configuration files. That would probably be bad because you guys are probably all experts on the hacking fields, and I got to watch that. We're going to click the pull down menu. There's two different IP addresses at this point. There is IPv4, which is version 4, and then there's IPv6, which is version 6. The only people that I know at this point using IP6 is I know Microsoft was playing with it, and Google was playing around with it for a while, trying to see if it would benefit them with all those different server farms and everything else for them to have all those additional addresses. But I would truly recommend, at least I'm going to teach you anyway, about IPv6. Because I've been using IPv4 for so many years, and I understand the way it works, and I understand the IP addressing scheme. So we're going to stick with that, especially for the internal network. Do you really need more than, a couple million addresses internally? Maybe, but I think you'll be just fine. We'll click the little triangle thing in front of it here, and we'll drop the menu down, the submenu. And then we have a couple things in here. We have server operations, and you can see server operations are additional configuration parameters. If we right-click on that, we can go to configure operations. And what you're going to have here is stuff like time offset, time server. So maybe you want this to also be your time server. Or you can tell where the time server is. I mean, you can drop an IP address here and tell where the time server is. The name servers, if you want those to be found on your DHCP server. And what these are allowing you to do is, when somebody gets an IP address from your DHCP server, they're also getting this other information. Your name servers, your time server. The name server, we're going to put that up here. We're going to see if this works. We're going to just put in here 192.168.1. I don't even know what the server really is. Let's say 2, and we'll add it. What that's going to do is, with your name server, is they'll actually pick that up when they get their address. So what that means is you don't have to go out and hard code any name servers or DNS numbers on the personal computers, because they can pick it up right from the DHCP server. The same with all this other stuff in here. Let me get down here and scroll down through this. Because here's your DNS server. So here's your name server, then your DNS server. It's the same one, 192.168.1.2. And we'll just add that. I was trying to validate it, which is not going to be able to validate it because I did not set the DNS server up yet. That's going to be another evening class. We could talk about that. So I'm just going to say no to that. And we'll move on here. Log servers. Cookie servers, if you want to serve up cookies, or if you know where those are serving at. And those are the cookies for your web servers. And you have everything else in here. Broadcast address. Lots of stuff that you can set up. We usually only tell it where the time server is. That's pretty important. And we tell it where the DNS servers are. So I'm just going to uncheck these. Hit cancel. You also have some policy-based stuff here that you can set up. You can do a new policy and give it a policy name. And these policies will allow you to do stuff based on MAC addresses. We can give an IP address based on a MAC address. And we'll talk about this stuff in just a little bit. It used to be called... I got this in my notes for you tonight. It used to actually be called reserving. And let me see here. It used to be called reserving and excluding address ranges. So we'll look at that in a few minutes. First, what I want to do is go up to the IPv4, right-click on it, and talk about new scope. All right, we have to build a new scope first. You get the new scope wizard, give it a name, and we like to name these things very, you know, straightforward. Scope 1. How's that? Hit next, you'll need a description. Your starting IP address, so where do you want to start it, and where do you want to end it? If you're just learning this and you're just building a new server form, I'm going to tell you to start this first one at... let's say we're using 192.168, which is an internal bank of addresses. We're going to talk about that in a minute. We're going to go 0. And what I like to do is make this 100. The reason is it's going to start at 0.100. So I know that I have 0.0 and up to 0.99 for my servers, for my internal printers. Stuff that I may want to put a static address on that I don't want to take a chance of those addresses being handed out. But we're going to also talk about another way of doing that by using the exclusion ranges. But still, this is just a good practice. Then we want to go here and we say, okay, how far do we want that to go? We want to go to 192.168. And we're going to say we're going to run this up to 2.253. Now, if you do this, this is no longer class C. So we would take this and make this 255.255. Yes, that's right. 255.0.0.0 for a class A network. Hit next. Now, this is where we can add the exclusion range. So if you added those ranges in there, if you added 0.0.0 to .0.99. If you added that in there, you can exclude them here so you don't hand those out. But let's say there's some addresses in the middle that you maybe staticked out for something. We did this maybe for iPads. Let's say 192.168.2.30 to 192.168.2.40. I'm going to add that. So those 10 addresses right there will never get handed out. There's no way those will hand out because now those are excluded from your IP configurations. This is the next thing I wanted to show you, the duration. We had our duration set for 2 days. Now what that means is, it's good or bad, on a smaller network, it's not that big of a deal because what's gonna happen is, if I bring my iPad into your network and I'm handed an IP address, as long as I visit that network every second day, that address stays to me, to my device. If I leave your network and do not come back, what happens at that point is that address will go back into the pool, and the next time I visit you, I will get a new address. Not a big deal. On our network, we had introduced 890 some devices on our high school network, on our new wireless. The DHCP server got overloaded. Part of that was because I had this limited to 2 days. So, and normally last year it was fine because we didn't have all those devices. We had to worry about our, kids bring, or the teachers and staff's laptops. We didn't have to worry about the kids bringing stuff in because they weren't allowed. So now what I did was I took this down to zero and I took my number of hours to 8. Because I figure if I plan this right, 8 hours would be about the normal school day. So when the kids enter, they get an IP address. When the kids leave for the night, after 8 hours, that address goes back into my scope and back into my availability for to be handed out once again. So I set it for 8 hours. Again, there's no, the thing I see about the DHCP server with this part, if you have this set, let's say we set this to 15 minutes. Well, obviously it's going to start kicking people off your network and they're going to be pretty unhappy with you because their IP address is going to be wanting to given back. As soon as they shut their lid and you go to lunch, they have no more IP address. They have to re-log back in or reestablish their connections to the server, Don't want to do that. So what happens is, the proper way to do this is if you do it 8 hours and let it hand it back, then you should be okay with no problems whatsoever. But if you get it too low, I think what's going to happen is your DHCP server is going to be so overworked, you'll probably end up smoking your server. And that's not like smoking meat, folks. That is not fun when a server just pops in the middle of the day and says, you know what, I've had enough. And it just quits and walks out on you. So anyway, we're going to set this relatively good 8 hours. Then when the people leave, it'll start handing those addresses back to our DHCP scope. And they'll be available again the next day. Next. Okay, when clients obtain an IP address, they are given a DHCP option such as the IP address of routers. Such as default gateways, DNS servers, WINS settings, and scopes. Do you want to configure some of this now? Let's say, yeah. Okay. Default gateway. Where is your router or where is your firewall, your last step to get people to the internet? That's the default gateway. And if you put it in your DHCP server, what's going to happen there is when they establish that connection, when they're handed an IP address, all this information comes with them. It makes it really easy on you. And most of them, I know ours is 192.168.1.1, and yours may be 0.1 if you started that low. I just tend to, that's how my brain works. So it's 1.1. The parent domain, you can put your domain names in here. Mydomain.org. And your DNS servers, we have one there. Let's just hit next. This is your WIN server, or your Windows Identification Name Services. If you still use that, most people do not use NetBIOS names through WINs because DNS kind of took that over, and now it runs that pretty well, so we don't use that anymore. Hit next. Yep, you want to activate the scope, and that will activate the scope. I'm going to say no, I'm going to activate it later because this is running on my home network, and I don't want to take a chance of us getting bumped off the air with you, so we don't want to do that. And here is our scope. Right here. We now have our scope. If we click this pull down menu, now we have all of our stuff in here, our leases. So you'll see leases coming up in here as they're handed out through the day. Our pool, this is showing our pool. Here's our exclusion range is right here. These are addresses we excluded. These are our reservations. Now let me tell you about a reservation and how that works. I'm going to bring his camera back down here. And let me move this stuff around a little bit. All right. So how a reservation works is just this. You reserve it. Now we do things like, if you're running a web filter especially, this is one of the biggest reasons we do it. But you may also want to do it where you're reserving an IP address because of some other reason. Some reason you're watching the IP, some reason you want to make sure that someone gets the same IP address all the time. We also do this sometimes if you want to leave your printer set on DHCP. I don't know why you would do that, but let's say you have a network printer. We will pull the MAC address and take that MAC address and reserve an IP address. That way we know that that printer every day gets the same address. That's pretty critical, right? Because when somebody goes to print, they're going to print towards the IP address. And if it changes, they can no longer print. Your phone starts ringing and you go off the hook because then you have to start really working out there. So the reservation is based on just that. It's simply a MAC address. And if you've never done that before, if you go to the start button, you go to the run command, type command CMD. When you get to the command prompt, type ipconfig space. I believe it's a forward slash. I hope I'm right there anyway. Either a forward or backward slash, all, A-L-L. When you hit the enter key, it's going to give you all that information. You can pull the MAC address off of the network card, and that's the physical address of the device. So you have the physical address, you go in here, and all you got to do is right-click on the reservation, go to new reservation. We give it a name. Let's say, Mr. Lockhead. Let's say we'd use that name. We give them an IP address, 192.168. It's going to be within that scheme somewhere, 2.1. We use their MAC address without the colons. Okay, you don't need the colons in here. It does not have to be uppercase and lowercase. It's not case specific, so don't worry about that. Just type it in. Give it a description. It's up to you because we have a name. We know who it belongs to. We'll even do this kind of stuff too. iPhone, because maybe it's their iPhone, or maybe we'll put that here. Whatever. You want it to be both, not just DHCP and not BootP. Just select both and click Add. I'm not going to obviously click Add because I have no MAC address, and it knows I have no MAC address in there. These are your scope operations right here. So you can see all these different operations here, the DNS that we set up. A router, that's your gateway right there is your router. And your domain name. If you have a domain name on your network, that will allow everything to work and connect. So you'll be good to go. Let me just bring up my notes here and see where we're at. Let me just bring this camera back up here. And I'll bring my notes up. All right. So let's just talk a few minutes here. A few more minutes of your time. Hopefully, I'm still riding along with you in your car and you're listening. That's how I listen to a lot of my podcast, huh? Just riding to work in the mornings. It's pretty nice to be able to listen to the podcast. All right. I did tell you that I wanted to show you, if you ever think you're out of IP addresses, all you have to do is just simply, on your scope, where your scope is here, if you right-click on that scope and click on Display Statistics, this is what clued us in right here. Total addresses, we didn't activate anything, so that's why it's saying zeros. In use, our in-use and availability was zero. The in-use was 100%. That is what clued us in to something was happening bad with our DHCP server. And it was extremely bad. So that's what happened to it there. All right. So bring this back up. Bring my notes back up. And let me just go over this one here. All right. Now, kind of while I'm on the subject of IP addresses, we're talking about all this, I have to tell you a little bit about your IP addresses And there's two different kind of IP addresses. There's routable IP addresses, if you're not familiar with these, and there's a internal IP addressing using for NAT, or network address translation. Now, routable means just that. It's an address that we can use from the, we can use it and we can see it from the internet, and it carries traffic from our network to the public internet. That's what a routable IP address is. It routes traffic through all the different routers of the internet, which there's billions of them. Everybody that basically, and it was interesting when we owned an internet service to sit, and I used to wonder, why is our router, the lights would just flash like crazy. Why? So I started investigating, and I found that internet traffic, as it's bouncing off of DNS servers looking for different places where it should be going, it may route through your router as it's going somewhere else. It's just a normal way that routers work. It doesn't, I used to think it was just a drop-off. Like, as soon as it knew it was coming to our service, it would just stop there. But that's not true. It bounces around, and it looks for the proper place where it needs to be. It's gaining information. Those packets are bouncing and coming your way. So that is a routable IP address. Now there's what's called the internal address. The internal addresses are addresses set up, and those addresses are only to be used internally. The two main, or there's three that I know of, 172s, 196, is that right? No, 192, I'm sorry, 192s, and then there's 10 dot whatever, and I think there's 11.2 that you can use. I've never used that one, but I know it's 172, 192, and 10. Those are your internal addresses. Now, we route all this stuff through our network and try to make it safe. I knew of one company actually called the ISP up and said, look, we need 253 IP addresses. And they said, why would you need 253 IP addresses? Because they said we wanted to give everything in their entire company a routable address. To this day, I don't know why a printer needs a routable IP address, but I guess if you wanted to print them from the internet and there's holes in the firewall, I guess you'll go right in and print to their desktop. I don't know why you wouldn't want to do that. We believe in the NAT system, the Network Address Translation System. What that allows you to do is it allows you to take the internal addresses and translate those to a routable IP address. That way, now, and people say you can do this, and I found some degradation, is that right? Degradation? Or, I don't know. Anyway, I found some problems with our network when I did that. If you take a bulk of addresses, let's say you have a Class A network and you're running it through your firewall to one routable IP address, the amount of traffic and the overhead that you're creating is astronomical. And what you're going to find, what we found, is the network traffic and the internet started slowing down to a crawl. I mean, to a crawl, because there was just too much traffic going across that network. That's what's really important, and you really have to watch it. I'm going to talk to you more about that when we talk about firewalls and we'll talk about routing and statics, and we'll dig into that a little bit on one of these podcasts. You have to use NAT, and you use NAT to map the outside address to the inside bank of addresses, and I like to do mine in Class C's, and we'll talk about that some other place down the road. But this allows me to control traffic and allows me to kind of hide, we like to believe anyway, it hides your internal stuff from the internet. So somebody would have to hack through your firewall, or they would have to hack through your router, whatever, to get to your internal IP addresses. And then they'd have to start spanning out, trying to figure out what each internal address is. So if they hack your HP printer, well, so be it. That happens. Anyway, I'm just seeing there. Let me take a quick look here. All right. So anyhow, that's about it. We're going to be wrapping this show up here. So hopefully you picked up something today. I'd like to thank you very, very much for joining me here for Tips from the Server Room. And these shows are definitely expanding, and I'm coming up with some new ideas. And writing the show notes really, really helps to keep me organized, because if not, you've listened to my shows before. Most of them are just off the top of my head, and I can just start rolling. But what happens sometimes there is, as you're rolling along, you kind of get lost in the shuffle. So, and folks, if you want to learn even more about DHCP, DNS, and all this great stuff with Windows servers, please check out my online classes. And these classes are covering Windows Server, 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012. If you're thinking of upgrading, that's a great place to start. You know, watch these courses and learn. I also teach VMware ESXi 5.1 server. So if you want to know how to virtualize your servers and you just don't know where to start, that's a great course. It's very inexpensive to take it, and you're really going to learn a lot. You can sign up for these online courses very easily. I put them on this website. So go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com. And at the very top, you'll see at the top links here, you'll say online classes. Click on that. And you can actually sign up. The classes are self-paced. They're very easy to follow. You watch a video and you take a little quiz. The quizzes are anywhere from one question to five. I make them very, you know, the basis of the quiz is to make sure that you're picking up the information and make sure that it's sinking in, to give you a little bit of reassurance that you have that information. But they are self-paced, and once you sign up, you're on the course forever. I don't delete anybody. I just leave you on there. So come back and watch it again. Each course, as I said, is low cost, but it's a very high impact. And once you complete the course, I will mail you through the mail certificate. Not like some of these companies do. They want to email you out and you have to print it off your printer. I see that as pretty chintzy. I want to mail you a certificate so you have that for your resumes. And I have a lot of folks out there that's already completed these courses, and they said it helped them get a job. When they told the employer like what they learned on the course, they said, wow, that's good. You have some fresh stuff in your mind. So check it out. Once again, it's tipsfromtheserverroom.com, and click on the online courses. So folks, I hope you have a great work week. Hey, keep those servers humming along. Keep that network running and watch your DHCP servers and make sure you always have enough IP addresses. And again, if you're not watching this show, or if you're just listening to this show and you're watching on YouTube, then come back and visit us live on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at justin.tv/JacksTechCorner. Also, if you're just listening to this as a podcast, check out the video to see what you missed there when I was actually walking through. We walked through the actual demonstration of the DHCP server, and hopefully I was able to listen and maybe pick that up too, and I was able to explain that good enough to you on the radio side. So thanks again for watching, and if you want to check it out on YouTube, it's 42 Technoman. So take care, everybody. Have a great work week, and I'll see you back here next week for another Tips from the Server Room. So long, everybody. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.